Blog Talk Radio.
Chatting with Sherry is brought to you by Patreon listeners like you. If you would like to join their ranks, go to patreon.com/readthebard. That's patreon.com/RIPHEBARD. And follow Sherry on all the various social networks at readthebard. That's RIPHEBARD. And now, from the studios in San Diego, California, here's Sherry.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Today, I bring you Hugo-nominated editor and author Brian Thomas Schmidt. We're going to talk about his books and writing and editing and all different kinds of adventures. Hi, Brian. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's nice to talk to you. We've been chatting via email. Why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to write and edit and all that stuff?
Well, I guess it kind of started with when I was a kid. My mom says I never played with a toy the same way twice. And I used to get really excited and really frustrated when the toys wouldn't do all the things I could picture them doing in my head. So I've kind of been a storyteller from when I was a kid, or maybe a really good liar. I don't know, one way or the other. And then, you know, I kind of turned it into a thing. Over the course of time, I started writing fanfic when I was in, like, grade school for some of my favorite, like, children's book series. And even collaborating with a friend on some stuff. And then I started creating my own TV show episodes for favorite TV shows. And then I created my own TV show and wrote like 20 episodes, you know, and then I did all this different stuff. And then eventually ended up writing fiction. And it took me a while. I got my degree in screenwriting. And so I pursued that for a while. And the number one comment I got, number one criticism I got was you need to live a little more and write a little bit more outside the box. So I went out and lived my life and went to Africa and Brazil and Mexico and all these crazy places and came back and started writing books, and here I am. Hello, I'm here.
Oh, I thought you cut out. I'm so sorry.
No, I'm
I think that you reminded me of something. When I was a little girl, I used to have one of my walks from one of the schools I went to was pretty long. I used to tell myself continuations or my own version of my favorite shows as I walked home from school. I think it was really the beginning of my creative writing. Like, I would imagine myself as the niece of Samantha from Bewitched, and I create this entire thing that my parents are actually witches, my brother's a warlock, and just to keep me company on the walk from school home, because I was usually walking by myself.
I used to do that too. I would also talk to myself, and I still occasionally do in the car and things about and talk to myself about different, talk through different subjects or practice something I'm going to say if I have to do a speech or if I'm going to have a conversation that's important or if I'm trying to figure out how to express something, or sometimes I'll even dictate, you know, parts of my chapters and different things. All of that came out of talking to myself as a kid when I was, like, you know, by myself walking home.
Yeah, I really think a lot of that, it's interesting because I didn't really think about it until you said it because it popped into my head. But a lot of my creativity started then, because it's about a couple of years later that I wrote my first real story. It wasn't like, it was for school. I wrote a myth, but it was from that period.
Yeah.
The teacher wrote like two lines on the board, and we're supposed to write a paragraph, and I ended up writing like 10 pages.
Very cool.
But it was from that same period of walking home from school and telling my dad always took me and my brother to school, but I always walked home by myself. And that, during that period, I used to tell myself stories. And I think that's when it started for me. I don't know, but I think that's when it started. Do you have a memory of when you actually wrote down your first story?
Boy, you know, I don't. I know that I would write different stories in grade school. So I don't know if anything earlier than that, but there probably was. But I definitely in grade school would write different stories down and helped my class write a play. We did our own plays. And so I don't know. I've kind of been involved in a lot of that. And as far as writing them down, it's been pretty much a lifelong thing. I also was a songwriter, and I wrote a lot of songs when I was a kid, too. I know in kindergarten I wrote my first instrumental piano piece. So I've been writing for a long time.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's the things that pop into your head when you're having a conversation. It's just, that's what pops into my head.
And it's also interesting that both of us, you know, we are creative enough. We talk to ourselves, entertain ourselves, and we also like to talk to people now. So here we are.
Yeah, exactly. It's very, very interesting. It's like a little circle of life. You can hear a lion singing somewhere in the distance in Africa.
That may have been a dog. I don't know.
I don't think it was a lion. It's more roar.
I don't know how to do the lion sound, but both the dog. But both my dogs are looking at me like that. Like, what are you doing?
Oh yeah. The funniest thing is to do meows and little yips and barks at cats and dogs because they're looking at you like, what are you doing? You don't know how to speak my language. Shut up.
Oh, you have a funny accent. Why are you doing that?
Yeah. Or you're just making sounds. You're not actually speaking, please.
Yeah, right. You're talking gibberish. What's that gibberish? Yes.
Yeah. Actually, one of my favorite series of novels is, what is her name? When you get older, you forget people's names. Her name is Rhea May Brown. I think that's the right way to, I think that's right. Anyway, she wrote a series of books about Mrs. Murphy, which is a cat, and her friends, and the cats and dogs and barnyard animals and everybody. They're much smarter than the people. I love that idea.
Rhea May Brown, it says. Yes, Rhea May Brown. Interesting. I hadn't read that. I just Googled it. I'll have to look it up.
Yeah, they're really, really cool.
They're mystery books, too, it looks like.
Yeah. I love mysteries. I love mysteries. I love science fiction. Well, see, I was a mystery buff. And when I got a little older, my dad weaned me into science fiction because he was a big science fiction fan.
Yeah, I like mysteries, too. I'm kind of mixing mysteries and science fiction now, so. It's kind of my favorite.
Yeah.
To mix them.
I think that's really cool to do that, to do both. In order to have a good mystery in the middle of a science fiction book is really fascinating. You don't read, a lot of science fiction fans don't seem to like mysteries, and mystery fans don't like science fiction. I mean, there are some, but it's like I'll talk to my science fiction fans and I'll be saying, oh, I just read the best Peter Wimsey, but they have a new series of books because they and then they're like, what are you talking, who's Peter Wimsey? What the heck are you talking about? And talk to,
I was going to say, the crossovers, I have one I've been trying to sell for a while now. It's tough. I mean, there's not everybody sees has the vision to see the possibility, and so it definitely is not the easiest sell. But, you know, I personally think that one of the beautiful things about both mystery and science fiction is that you can do a lot of cross-genre stuff. There's a lot of possibilities of things that you can do that cross over. So, you know, I hope to eventually sell mine so we can actually prove that I'm right about that.
Buy my book!
Right, exactly. It's making the rounds of the publisher. Somebody eventually will want it, but I get good feedback from that, but they're just not sure what to do with it because it's not the typical thing that they do, and that's an interesting place to be. Sometimes you have to wait for the right time, though. You write something really original, and then you have to wait for the right time for somebody to say, this is something we're going to do, and just run with it, you know. It's happened to various people, like Andy Weir, with the Martian, so you never know.
Yeah, it's just, it's weird because it's like, it's so easy for me to understand that, but I know that there are purist fans out there who are purist mystery fans and purist science fiction that will say those two genres will never meet and you shouldn't try and bad on you.
Right.
But then there's the same people
I
who
love...
get mad at somebody who takes a liberty on a mystery novel or science fiction novel. So
I think people, you know, crossovers are underrated because I think crossovers are a big part of the market anymore. I think you see it in any kind of genre. You see crossovers. I mean, J.D.
Mm-hmm.
Robb has a huge successful In Blood series that is about a detective that's a near future, far future science fiction detective series that a lot of the fans read because of the romance in it, but it is very much a science fiction series. And it's not advertised that way, but it is.
And doesn't Kevin J. Anderson have horror and mystery? If I remember right.
Dan Shamble.
Detective in a horror.
Dan Shamble's zombie detective.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah.
So there are some out there, but it's a different crossover.
And then you've got things like, for example, the book that I have out today called Joe Ledger Unstoppable, which is a thriller / horror science thriller series, and it's about a group of government agents that fight off everything from zombies to vampires to crazy scientists who are trying to put a disease and spread a disease through bottled water to any number of things, or even use nanobots to destroy people. It's high tech. There's always the thriller edge and there's always the mystery edge to it. And at the same time,
yep.
It's got all the science and the science fiction, but it's set in a contemporary time frame.
Which is cool.
Yeah, which is cool.
I think that one of the best things to do is to widen your horizons, to try something you've never read before. And I was watching, this really made me sad. I was watching this show about teenagers and movies, and there was a psychiatrist, and they were asking her, what do the teenagers read? I mean, are they into reading this and that and this? And the psychiatrist looked at her and she says, sadly, most of them don't read. And I'm like, stab right in the heart.
Yeah, I don't understand that because in my generation, I used to read all the time and I loved to read, but I know that happens with kids today. They read when they have to, but they don't read for fun. And I guess in a way, maybe with video games and TV, we spoiled them for that. But I, you know, for me, reading was a great escape, and I used to love to dig into a good book, and I still do. And I definitely, you know, agree with you that reading something you've never read before is a good challenge. It's something I always say to my writers, you know, don't just read your genre. Don't just read what you like. Go out there and find other stuff. You'll learn a lot more about craft. You'll learn a lot more about good storytelling by reading other things outside your box. And you'll learn how to do some things with twists and turns that you never would have thought of before because you're reading something that's not using the same tropes over and over again. So,
also, you should read outside of even fiction. You should read biographies and watch documentaries because that's inspiring. At least for me, it's been inspiring to do that.
Well, I think that most writers who are worth their salt do a lot of that for research anyway. But yes, absolutely. I mean, that's where a lot of the research comes for a lot of my stuff. But then I have to say I do it for fun.
I do it for fun. I love biographies.
I find it fun too, but I take a step further and I go right along with the cops. Like I'm not actually doing it, but I was going to do a ride along tonight and ride along with the cops. That's what I typically ride along and see how they do their job and what it's like for them. And it's because of the fact that I write. That's how I write my police procedural. It's by basing it on real cops and real incidents, and so it's not just reading the biography; it's living it a little bit.
That's really interesting. Are you doing a ride along? Because I mean, things people are so violent with, especially against cops today. Do you ever get nervous?
Yeah, I do ride alongs in the single worst neighborhood in Kansas City. I mean, it's wild. I get nervous, but you know, for the most part, people have treated me very well. I have seen a little bit of bad treatment of the cops, but most people have ignored me and not done anything to me. But it's always a possibility, and you always have to be cautious. And so, you know, if there's a particularly bad situation, they just tell me to stay in the car. They're like, don't even, you know,
don't get
even come over. Yeah, just stay right here. But it's one of those things where, for the most part, I haven't had that happen. But, you know, I don't go to – I haven't been in really extreme situations. I've been there after the situation. I've been to multiple murder scenes and a stabbing scene and things like that, but it's always been after everything happened.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. I love murder mysteries. I love the puzzles of putting together what happened and the psyche of it and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But the actual seeing a dead body is not something I ever want to do.
They never took me inside to the scene to see the body because we were on the perimeter. So I have seen a victim of a gunshot up close that we helped and went to the hospital with who was shot, but I have not actually been in the room with a dead body. But I guess I do enough ride-alongs it might eventually happen, but no, I haven't been yet. It's not something I look forward to. But then my dad was a doctor who trained paramedics in rural Kansas. So I rode along in a lot of ambulances back when I was like 6 through, you know, teenage years. And my dad would bring me with him to the accident scene or whatever. And they'd be like, we need you to hold the IV, come on the ambulance. So I'd ride to the hospital with the patient. So I've seen some dead bodies and I've seen some different stuff. So I'm kind of more numb to it than some people are. I certainly wouldn't want to be around if the body's been there for several days.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that would not be pleasant. But I have been around it only when the body was not at that point yet. So.
Well, that's good.
It's kind of like when you're with an animal, if you ever had an animal die or anything, you know. It's very similar to that. It's kind of surreal. And there's a physical form there, but there's no personality to it. Anyway,
I want to give you an opportunity to talk about your new books, please.
Hearing you on your own show on Halloween.
Yes. Yeah, I'm gonna wait. I'm waiting for the haunting any second now.
anyway, no, you know, I have some new books out. I'm pretty excited about them. We have the 30th anniversary of the movie Predator, so we have Predator If It Bleeds is out, and that's an anthology of 16 new stories set in the Predator universe. And they're throughout Earth history and history of the galaxy where people are having encounters with the Predators. And that's been a lot of fun, and we've had a really good reception to that from the fans. And so I have really, you know, really cool writers like Jonathan Mayberry and Mira Grant and Scott. Well, let's see. Let me think. Tim Levin and Kevin J. Anderson, as you mentioned earlier, and Larry Correa writing stories for that, among other people. And I have my own story in that. It's a sequel to Predator 2 that I wrote with Holly Roberts. And then we have another book that's kind of also Halloween-friendly, is The Monster Hunter Files, which is an anthology in the New York Times best-selling series Monster Hunter International by Larry Correa that has a whole bunch of authors like Jim Butcher and Faith Hunter and John Ringo writing stories in the Monster Hunter universe about people who are saving the world from the monsters that live among us. You know, there's orcs. It's that garden gnome that you think is so cute might not be your friend. And there's different things. Yes. And so that's pretty cool. And then I have this Joe Ledger thing I already mentioned that has a lot of really cool authors like Scott Sigler and Steve Alton and Jonathan and Larry and Amira Grant again and David Farland and a whole bunch of people involved. And then we also have Infinite Stars, which is a really thick science fiction anthology of space opera. The publisher saddled me with the label Definitive Space Opera Anthology. What I'm really trying to do is put together the best of space opera and military sci-fi writers who are writing today with some of the classics and show people kind of the way the genre has developed from the 1930s up to present day and, you know, different forms that it has taken. And so that was a really cool, it's kind of my favorite of my anthologies because it was a passion project, but it also got really big. It's like 671 pages. It's this huge monster thing. Yeah. I'm like afraid that if I dropped it on one of the dogs, it would seriously injure them.
You break its toe.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'm about to break my toe with that thing.
who's the classic authors in that one?
We've got Anne McCaffrey. We've got Larry Niven and Jerry Purnell. Jerry Purnell passed away just before the book came out. We have A.C. Crane. We have Lee Brackett and Edmund Hamilton, Paul Anderson, Cordwainer Smith, and then I have more recent tales by Nadia Corafor, Lois McMaster Vujold, Robert Silverberg, David Drake.
Cool.
Yeah.
Sounds really interesting.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, do you have a novel that of yours coming out too? I think you mentioned that.
I had a novel. Actually, my latest novel came out in September, like the end of September. So, yeah, I mean, I've had 5 books come out in the last, 5 weeks. It's kind of been incredible. My last book, The Exodus, which is in my Saga of Davy Ree space opera series. You can see there's a theme here. That's why I didn't like doing space opera, because I write space opera. It's my Star Wars, and it's basically the Moses story to like Star Wars without some of the heavy religious elements. It's more about a prince who discovers he was born a slave, but the slaves are humans too, and he helps them fight for freedom. And to do so, he has to stand up against his uncle, who is, it turns out, is their oppressor. He was raised by the man, he loved him, and then he finds out that what he's really been doing is wrong, and he has to stand up against him. So there's family conflict, and there's politics, and there's action, and there's humor and adventure, and all kinds of stuff in the story. And it took place over 3 books, and it's one of the stories I dreamed up, believe it or not, when I was a kid, back in the day when I used to talk to myself. You know, when I was 13, 14, 15 years old, I thought it'd be fun to do my own version of Star Wars, and I wanted to do my own big epic Moses thing, and it took me 25 years to write it, but I finally did it.
I always wonder, and he never really answered that. The Campbell said that the hero's journey is always male, and I'm like, why? And he says, well, because it's tradition, and da da da. I'm like, well, that doesn't make any sense. Women should have epic stories too. What do you think?
Well, women have epic stories. There are epic stories in the story of Benti, which is the Nnedi Okorafor story about a kind of an African space opera about a female student and who goes through and is a cadet and the things that she goes through. There are epic stories about women in the Liaden universe by Sharon Lee and Steve Miller. There are certainly epic stories about women in the Imperial Radic and Lecky series. There's a number of series that I can think of that have women at the center that are space opera. Even in the Miles Berkozigan series by Lois Bujold, there's some major Cordelia, some Miles' mother, and some other ones. Also in the Scullion Empire series by Catherine Asaro in the That Is War series by Elizabeth Moon, and then the Confederation series by Tanya Huff. These are all big series that have major female characters. So I would say they're epic.
Are they hero genies, or are they just epic with strong female characters? There's a difference.
They're epic stories with heroines at the center.
Okay. Because that's what I was talking about. Because Campbell says that's impossible and never happens. And I'm like,
Campbell was of the old days, and things have changed.
Yeah, thank God.
You know, when people in eras like Campbell say things like that, they're living with a certain societal mores. And in their day, the possibilities for women were much more limited than they are now. And their concept and ability to conceive of how things would be for women were limited by their time frame and their social economic circumstances. Things have changed. Women can do whatever men can do now. You know, if they want to, they can. And often do. And unfortunately, there are still people who live by those mores who sometimes create problems for them in trying to do so. But, you know, the possibility still exists for them in a way that they never did back in the day of Campbell.
Thank God. Thank God. Yeah. But yeah, it's I always thought that was Bill Maher, his series of interviews with him. It was fascinating and it was very interesting. But when it came to that, I got so angry. I didn't erase it. I came back and watched the rest, but I actually turned the TV off and left the room. I was so mad.
Well, I can understand that reaction. If you were listening to, you know, God forbid I should mention him on this show, but President Trump talk about that right now.
Yeah.
That would be much more infuriating to me than talking about somebody who was around 50 years ago talking about it. You know, if they're around 50 years ago and they are talking about it still now, well, that's problematic because, like, Trump was around 50 years ago. People should have changed their point of view is my point. But when you're talking about someone who was interviewed, you know, a long time ago saying things, you know,
no,
I guess you have to.
It wasn't that long ago. It was 2006 or 2007. It's just before he died.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Well,
yeah.
Some people do get stuck in their time frame, I guess. Yeah. I mean, I didn't realize Campbell had lived that died that recently. But yeah, I don't know. I think things have changed, but some people don't change with the times. And that's just always going to be a problem. No matter what. I know women who will tell you that I know women who I've seen argue that women and men are different and they should have different roles and that's the way God intended it and that's the way it is. I mean, there are women who believe that. So if there are women who believe that, you know, I mean, it's just the way it is. That there are people who are always going to believe those kind of things. So anyway.
I know. Makes me sad.
We kind of got that feminist thing, didn't we?
I know. I do that. And just, if someone says something that sparks something in my head, I go off. I want to give you a chance, though, to tell if you're going to be anywhere. Do you have online events or personal appearances or signings that you want to let the audience know about?
Oh, boy. I have a ton. You know, I've got, in fact, tomorrow I'm in Columbia, Missouri at the Barnes & Noble in the evening. And then I'm doing a writer's conference for the Johnson County Library System here in Kansas City area this weekend. And then on Sunday, I go home to Salina, Kansas, my old hometown, and sign at Books A Million. And then I have signings in Barnes & Noble and Books A Million in the Kansas City area the following weekend and so on and so forth. So I'm all over the place. I just got back from this weekend doing signings in Oklahoma. And so I'm all over the place.
Wow, that's cool.
You can find me on my website, of course, brianthomasschmidt.net, anytime you want. And I'm on Twitter as Brian Thomas S. And you can do Facebook.com, Brian Thomas S. And you can find me. So I'm around. And, of course, I also have a podcast with Peter Wax, who was a guest last week, I think. And Peter and I do genre talk together. It's genretalk.podbean.com. And we interview different authors and other people, celebrities and various people, about fandom and what they're a fan of. So we kind of do – it's not about one genre. It's about any genre. But you know, those are kind of the places to find me. But, yeah, I'm out and about. I'm also doing some online contests with some book plates for people who want signed copies of books that can't get them. And I go into a lot of different stores whenever I'm in a town and sign books. So usually a lot of stores, you know, you can always ask if they know how to get a hold of me. They can always get a hold of me for a book plate for you or a signed copy. Or they can, you can contact me through my blog at brianthomasschmidt.net and say, can you send me a book plate? And I usually try to do that.
Cool.
So,
There's a lot of things that you guys out there can catch up with Brian at and say hi and have him sign. And do you do readings at your signings too?
When they ask me to, I do. A lot of times they just want to do discussions like panels where people can ask me questions and have me talk a little bit about the book and, you know, how I do what I do and that kind of thing. So I do a lot of that. Some of the conventions want readings, so I do readings. But mostly it's panels. I've got some appearances that I'll do with some of my other authors, like in early December, the first weekend of December, I'm in Denver with several of my authors, Denver and Fort Collins and Colorado Springs. We're going to be all three places over the course of a weekend. And we'll be doing some appearances, and then I appear with other people when they're available. I also do a lot of Comic Cons. So at Comic Cons, I'll have a table where I'm selling and signing books, and I'll go do panels, and then I'll also occasionally do readings and other things as well. But, you know, people are welcome to come by and talk or say, hey, read me something, and I'll read them something.
Okay. We've come to the end. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. I hope you enjoyed it.
I did. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And thank you for chatting with Sherry.
Chatting with Sherry is brought to you by listeners like you. You can support this program by leaving a rating or a review at iTunes, at Sherry's Patreon account, patreon.com/readthebard, or by following Sherry on all the various social media at readthebard. That's R-I-T-H-E-B-A-R-D. Once again, that's readthebard. R-I-T-H-E-B-A-R-D. And thank you for chatting with Sherry.